Where It All Began. It was 1998, and I was watching Madonna talk about her just-released Ray of Light album. She said the songs were about her spiritual transformation, an evolution of her sound that gave her purpose and perspective about who she is and what she wanted to teach her daughter. I didn't have kids yet, and I wasn't married, but I nodded my head as if I heard something I already knew. We have to know ourselves if we want to live and parent effectively. We can't share what we haven't realized or practiced. I might have known this intuitively, or maybe all of the self-help books had begun to seep in. I read my first Wayne Dyer book in my late teens, and from then on, I had a gravitational pull to the self-help and positive psychology aisle. But at best, I was using the information as a quick fix, and at worst, I was acquiring spiritual knowledge to feel special. It was only a surface experience with consciousness and universal principles. I liked the way it felt and sounded, but I wasn't living what I knew. And then a series of life-changing events, including my father's heart attack and chronic illness, getting married, and eventually having my first child, pushed me into deep discomfort. What had always worked was no longer working, and this led to an identity crisis and a heightened sense of imposter syndrome. I felt increasingly depressed and anxious, so much so that I was willing to surrender everything for peace. It was my Madonna Ray of Light moment. I had to break down the structures I had relied on to discover a true way of being. Some refer to this as the dark night of the soul, but unfortunately, it extends beyond one night. It's a deep dive into a new way of seeing things when the old ways no longer work, a reevaluation of what's most important. At the time, I called it a personal reckoning, a reconciliation of pain that had been denied or repressed, and an unlearning of things that no longer worked. The best way I can describe the first couple of years of this process is yikes. The unexamined life felt like a much easier path, and I often question what the hell I was doing. Confronting the truth about anything can be painful and difficult, and I constantly wondered if the road less traveled was worth it. But with pain and unlearning also came clarity of choices and a focus on what really matters. Life felt like more about finding my own contentment rather than satisfying other people's expectations. I said no to what didn't work. I said yes to what I knew I wanted. I started to feel more comfortable in my skin and connected to what was happening around me. My sole intention was to continuously locate the person I was before the world told me to be something different. I remember at one point fully comprehending that we live on a ball floating in space surrounded by 2 trillion galaxies, and that maybe the things that seemed so overwhelming weren't that important. It literally made me shake my head and laugh out loud, like I was finding my way back to the bigger picture. Being a part of it all blew my mind, and Rumi's quote, "You are the universe, in ecstatic motion," made sense in a new way. I was suddenly in awe that babies grew in our bodies and needed no help in doing so, that caterpillars became goo and then turned into butterflies, that salmon used their sense of smell to swim upstream. Things that had seemed so common now felt extraordinary, like life had a natural rhythm and sense of purpose. It became obvious that I needed to make peace with the mortality of my dad and just death overall. Death is what all living things have in common, yet we are so uncomfortable talking about it. As author and Zen Hospice founder Frank Ostaseski said, "Death is not waiting for us at the end of a long road. Death is always with us, in the marrow of every passing moment. She is the secret teacher hiding in plain sight, helping us to discover what matters most." Death awareness leads to appreciating life's preciousness, encouraging us to be braver and more attentive with our lives. The more I got this, the more I enjoyed staring out windows rather than at my computer screen. I took some risks talking, writing, and teaching what I was learning, and I made some mistakes along the way. I remember one of my teachers saying, "Keep making mistakes, because if there are no more mistakes, you are done." And I don't mean done with that thing, I mean done. It felt like permission to go all in with less worry, like raising my hand to ask a question rather than pretending I understood. But since there are light and dark to everything, old beliefs still lurked in my brain like old ghosts that knew only how to be scary. They would frighten me into thinking that if I continued to unlearn or grew in self-awareness, I might end up leaving my family and living as a monk on a mountaintop. This was a real concern that kept me up at night, a feeling that I was choosing myself over others, that I was selfish or losing touch with the real world. I later learned that a lot of women feel this way as they awaken to themselves. It's as if we feel the collective unconsciousness of all women. The historical reality that women were confronted with the terror and risk of evolving beyond their societal conditioning, not because of weakness or a lack of desire, but because of the threat of societal isolation, retribution, or death. Evolving today may not carry the same risks as our ancestors, but it's still a level of awareness that all women must move through, a realization that awake women disturb the system, and that this disruption is a threat to our conditioned self and society as a whole. Something needs to die for something new to come to life. But once we hear, feel, or however we experience it, the call to evolve, it can be difficult or almost impossible to turn down its volume. Trying to stay asleep, and believe me, I tried, made me physically and emotionally ill, and I no longer had the choice to push it away. I felt compelled by something larger than myself, leaving me terrified and relieved at the same time. As Sue Monk Kidd says in The Dance of the Dissident Daughter, there is no place so awake and alive as the edge of becoming. But more than that, birthing the kind of woman who can authentically say, my soul is my own, and then embody it in her life, her spirituality, and her community is worth the risk and hardship. I continued to learn and grow, but the terror stuck around, telling me I would change and become unrecognizable to myself and the ones I love. But in many ways, the result was quite the opposite. I did have to grieve some relationships and work experiences that no longer fit with my new understanding, but I also had more energy to show up for my family. Taking responsibility for myself let the people I loved off the hook. It was no longer their responsibility to fill me up, and I no longer felt like I was in charge of their becoming. I experienced the paradox of loving them better by backing away, by living my life so they could have their own. I set myself free from needing their constant appreciation and then felt more appreciated. I ditched the role of mom and became a person who also happened to be a mom, which allowed me to approach my kids with humanness rather than hierarchy. I got out of the box that told me who I was supposed to be and showed up as myself, allowing me to show up more authentically for my family. Self-awareness is an internal process, like shining a bright flashlight on all the hidden places of the mind. This ability to see clearly allows us to know ourselves and appreciate who we are, allowing us to choose rather than react, and trust rather than live in a constant state of anxiety. Shit still happens, but the lag time of feeling fear and pain gets shorter, while the ability to return to center or ask for help speeds up. If we can role model and teach our kids how to see themselves clearly from the very beginning, the flashlight won't be as needed because they'll already have a working light switch. They can naturally check in with their emotions and appreciate why they have them. They can use tools to self-regulate rather than spiral into a tantrum. They can appreciate the uniqueness of their minds and hearts and live in a place of self-acceptance rather than shame. Education and outward achievement are pieces of the good life puzzle, but true contentment comes from a healthy internal life. Study after study has proven that emotional intelligence, defined as the ability to recognize, understand, and manage our own emotions, and recognize, understand, and influence the emotions of others, predicts future success in relationships, health, and quality of life, and that children with high EQ earn better grades, stay in school longer, and make healthier choices overall. Instead of forcing kids into what we perceive to be the norm, we can teach them to respect their uniqueness and practice self-compassion during difficult times. We can remind them that they are hardwired for challenges and that even failure will lead to greater strength and resilience. We can encourage them to love their time here, to show up as themselves, and take advantage of their moments. If we want our kids to really get this, we must do it first. Instead of lecturing them about self-acceptance, we need to demonstrate what it looks like. Instead of telling them to ask for help or for what they need, we need to show them how it's done. Children do not learn by listening to what we say. They learn by watching how we live. This audiobook is about having your Madonna ray of light moment, about practicing self-awareness to gain clarity about what you want to pass on. It's about taking inventory of how you were parented and figuring out what stays and what goes. This is a needed evolutionary process that is essential for every generation because the world and level of awareness are constantly changing. Some traditions and expectations will remain timeless, but other teachings or expectations may no longer fit. If your children have children, they will hopefully go through the same exercise of filtering through what works and what doesn't for their family. This is also an opportunity to introduce yourself to your kids, to be your true self as a parent rather than play the role of parent, to support your kids without completely forgetting who you are or choosing martyrdom and then wearing it like a badge of honor. Martyrdom hurts you and eventually your family because it leads to your resenting them for what you do. You build a relationship with your kids over time, and it's important to establish a sturdy foundation built on personal responsibility and practicing what you preach. Sitting on the sidelines of life and then yelling at our kids about how they should participate isn't fair and will inevitably lead to tension and disconnection. Instead, we get to demonstrate self-understanding and self-compassion. We get to recognize our mistakes and apologize when necessary. We get to notice and accept our emotions and trust that they will naturally come and go. We get to be joy seekers and expand our awareness so we can see the big picture and interconnectedness of all things. Then our kids will know how to be awed by the world and feel at home in their skin, wherever they may go.